Hello there, all you CIers. This is Charlie, broadcasting on an iPod. I thought we might take a look at some of those questions that you asked the other day as far as wanting to know about the upcoming CI rotation. We had an extraordinarily successful meeting with Vasanti, and although it may have raised some anxiety, I think it also provided us a lot of answers to questions. So, for what it's worth, here's my take on some of the questions that you asked. I hope that this would be helpful. If a group of students just aren't working well together, is it okay to switch them? Well, yeah, sure. I wouldn't switch them right away. I certainly wouldn't switch them on the first day. But if students are not working together, you are the teacher and you are in control. So you can switch people across groups. You can take a person out of a group and just leave them out of the rotational activities until they're ready to participate. My experience with people taken out of groups is that it takes but a day of them watching their friends having fun and they want back in. Next question. For a resource card, can I use a nonfiction book? Quick answer to that? Yes, with a warning. A nonfiction book, or any book for that matter, privileges one particular kind of multiple ability. So it's important for the group to have sharing norms so that those people who are not the most successful readers will not feel unsuccessful by someone else reading the information that's in the book. It's all the more important to include a book that would have pictures and maybe other forms of visual representation so that more children in the group will have access to the information that's carried there. Next question. For the pre-post test, should we measure knowledge of content or multiple abilities? The pre-test post test is focused just specifically on content. What can you do with the activities projects that are finished each day? Do kids present them during the closing meeting? Second part first. Yes, kids do present their activities during the wrap-up. It is not necessary for them to present everything that they've done. And again, it's in your role and in your authority and in your power as a teacher to focus in on what you want children to present in order to kind of salt the pot for the next day's activity. What I mean by that is the kids who will be doing that activity the next day will be interested in some of the information that that group has to report out. So if you don't want them to report everything, focus on some things that you think will provoke the next day's group. If there are projects that are finished each day by each group, it's perfectly okay to post them in the room and even to use them in an orientation the next day, urging children to look at things a little differently, thinking about how they might put their own special tweak on an activity. Can I give a first grader two roles? You can, but the role should be simplified, and as a general practice, it isn't something I would advise. For the most part, giving a first grader two roles means they'll have three things to do, and that's kind of hard. They'll have to do the two roles as well as be a participating member of the group, as all kids. Well, we're on question number six now. Will four different activities on food from around the world be too narrow? I think my answer to that is it all depends on what the activities are. Again, the more the activities appeal to a wide range of multiple abilities, the less narrow those activities will be. Next question has to do with roles. How do I describe the role of facilitator to very young students so they do not find it unfair that this person is a type of leader? Maybe they won't have a problem with it. Well, facilitator is a 25-cent word to very young students, so you may want to just name it as leader, or captain, or chief, or team leader, or something like that. And they might not find it unfair. They just might find it helpful. If they find it unfair, perhaps you want to think about rotating the roles. Again, it's important in this case to emphasize the fact that not everyone has all of the abilities, and everyone has some of the abilities, and when we put all our abilities together, that's what makes the richest group. Number 8, someone asks, I want to know more about getting slower processors and lower academic students involved. Well, that's what the whole point of complex instruction is. So the degree to which you can build richness into the groups, have a variety of multiple abilities in the tasks, and then assign competence to the slower processors, when you see them doing something that will help the rest of the people in the group, that's what will get the slower processors involved. And again, they'll get involved because the other children want them to get involved. Are there ever groups of students that do not benefit from complex instruction? Well, that's an interesting question and one that's hard for me to answer. All the research shows that every child in complex instruction learns more. The high-flying students, they show increases in content acquisition, and the students who fly a little closer to the ground show increases in content acquisition. So from my point of view, there is never a group that doesn't benefit. Now, some parents will tell you, and even some kids will try to tell you, that they work better alone. But I think those kinds of statements come from a social Darwinistic point of view. And actually, it is something we want to try to avoid as a rule in our classrooms. This is, of course, a much larger conversation. How much time for sharing? And I assume what you mean here is how much time for the wrap-up. Again, this is a judgment call by you as the teacher. There's no ironclad rule. Every group should have some piece of what they did shared, and not every group needs to share everything that they talked about. So sharing isn't something that just has to do with what happened on that day. Sharing also has to do with what information you want to make sure the groups hear in order to provoke their rotational work on the next day that you do CI. So think about that when you think about how much time for sharing. The next question also has something to do with sharing. It is, how is sharing structured? Well, sharing is structured by basically going around and having different groups talk about what it is that they're doing. You take the lead, and you work with the authority on this, and you don't just let each group talk until that group is done. You really want to structure that, and you lead it as the teacher. You take authority and lead the wrap-ups. How much preparation with roles and norms? How far in advance? Again, all depends on your group. If your group generally works cooperatively, then you need less preparation with roles and norms, and you can probably start a week or two before the rotation. Your job then is to translate how roles and how the norms of CI translate into the normal roles, and especially norms that are present in your classroom. But if you have a group that never does group work, then you want as much preparation as you can before the CI rotation. So I would even start 3 to 4 weeks before the CI rotation, doing a couple of skill builders a week and rubbing in the norms that achieve successful group practice in those skill builders. I would even have the children write out the norms in some sort of classroom activity. You might make bumper stickers, you might make posters, you might make little stickets that they would use on their own desks, so those norms get right in front of their little minds. How do I incorporate and deal with team teaching? And I assume that this question is about working on a team with another teacher who doesn't know much about CI. Well, you have to bring the other teacher into what the purposes of CI are, and this can be a little difficult given your tender position in the classroom as a student teacher. But basically, what the thing to watch out for is for another team member, another team teacher, to avoid too much loitering and hanging on in the groups and trying to affect what happens in the groups. That's probably the number one thing you have to get across to your team partner and to classroom instructional aides. The handout that Vasanti gave us, which is kind of a one-page clue sheet in the CI, might be helpful in this regard. Last question. Many students don't get along. Groups are made as friendly as possible, and yet issues will arise. Yep, that's true, although this is probably particular to one particular classroom where many students don't get along. Again, in a case like this, preparation is really important. So, doing a lot of skill builders, using the norms, trying to get the kids to do some warm-up activities together where they actually have fun, maybe doing some groups where all the groups work on the same activity, one that's pretty easy, so they can experience success and have a good time together doing it, are all ways of getting the groups ready to do CI. I often think that when students don't get along a lot, that is kind of a mirror to perhaps how they're being treated in the classroom, recognizing, of course, that they bring a lot of collaborative baggage into the classroom with them. But your classroom begins where the door closes, and when you are teaching on your own, remember that. You won't be able to change all the social structure that the kids walk into your class with, but if you take the first 6 to 8 weeks of school, as the responsive classroom does, in getting your social structure well-defined and well underway, and the kids really reinforced for the good behavior that you will expect from them, then this issue of students not getting along will look very differently. Well, that's about it for the questions on CI in the KWL. This little broadcast has taken about 13 minutes. I hope you may find some of these questions useful, and I hope you've enjoyed tuning in. That's all for now.